This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
In the wake of the Postal Survey on marriage equality, a heated debate, particularly on social media, has started up about the role migrant communities played in the electorates that voted no, particularly those in Western Sydney. I spoke with Giselle Oinyan Nguyen, a Vietnamese-Australian writer and the communications manager for the Feminist Writers Festival, whose opinion piece, "My Conservative Vietnamese Family from Western Sydney Voted Yes, Stop Blaming Migrants," was published in the Sydney Morning Herald on November the 17th, Friday.
Earlier this year, I wrote a piece about how my parents have come around on a lot of things, not just with marriage equality, but other things that in the past they never would have come around to. And they just have, just by living here and having kids who've grown up here and stuff like that. So that's where it came from.
One of the things that you did mention, as well as your own experiences, was that while the No campaign distributed a lot of pamphlets in Mandarin, as well as Vietnamese and Arabic, there wasn't a whole lot of that happening from the Yes campaign. So would it have made a difference, do you think, if there'd been some attempt to contradict or provide counter-arguments that did make an effort to be in more than one language?
I actually saw a really good Facebook post that was going around by a woman who was a Yes campaigner who did go into those communities, and she was saying stuff like, we need to kind of put more effort into speaking to non-English speaking communities about these issues, because a lot of the Yes campaign language used and stuff, it does not actually translate well into other languages.
Like, so the love is like, love kind of thing?
Yeah, love is love. Like that, like, I think even in Vietnamese, it wouldn't make sense.
Yeah.
So I think the efforts need to be recentered, and I think that there can be quite a narrow view of who we should be speaking to. But I think that, like, marriage equality and these kinds of campaigns sometimes can be quite white in the way that they're approached and talked about.
Yeah.
And for me, like, talking to my parents and my family on a person-to-person basis, like, that does help. But some people from these backgrounds won't have any queer people in their families.
Yep.
So all they see is this kind of really hateful No campaign stuff saying, like, equating gay marriage to all of these terrible things. So it's fear-mongering.
Yeah.
And they don't have anything to counter that. So, yeah, I think, like, definitely there needs to be more people going out into these communities and speaking to them in ways that they can relate to. And also, I think a lot of people who respond to that piece say stuff like, you can't excuse homophobia. Like, just because it's a cultural difference, they're still being homophobic, which is true. Like, I don't think that there's an excuse for homophobia, but I also think that culture is very complex.
Absolutely.
And it takes a while for people to come around sometimes.
Do you think there's an issue in the broader community, LGBTI community, with engaging with people from non-English speaking backgrounds?
I think so. And like I said, we can't take a kind of one-size-fits-all approach to anything, because something that will work for people who have English as a first language will not necessarily work for people who have English as a second language. Some people have asked me after reading my thing about how my parents eventually came around, and I can't actually pinpoint it, and I wish I could, but I can't. My dad is quite a prominent member of the Vietnamese community in Australia. For ages, I was like, oh, I don't want to bring shame on my family or, like, have anyone think that I'm, like, this terrible rebel child. Because when I was growing up, we had gay family members. My parents were always a bit weird about it. Because when I started writing a lot more about my life and, like, sex and things that I was not supposed to talk about when I was growing up, I was really worried about how my parents would react. But I think it's really helped them to come around on things. And also, surprisingly to me, a lot of the reactions from the Vietnamese community has been really good, of people emailing them and being like, you should be so proud of your daughter for being brave. So it's really great, because like, when I was growing up, I really never thought that that would be the case. And I was just really proud to hear when my sister said that my dad was talking to his patients and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because if you're hearing that stuff from someone who's, like, your doctor, who's been your doctor for, like, 20 years, and you really trust him, I think it makes a difference to people, rather than being, like, door-knocked or something.
That was Dizelle Onyenyoyen, a Vietnamese-Australian writer, about her opinion piece, My Conservative Vietnamese Family from Western Sydney Voted Yes, Stop Blaming Migrants.
We're now joined by Sally Rugg, the Marriage Equality Director at GetUp, and by Ivan Hinton To, who's the founder of Just Equal. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Now, both of you were heavily involved in the Yes campaign. We were interested, what's your explanation for the very low Yes vote in those Western Sydney suburbs?
We'll go to Sally first.
Sure. I mean, what we do know is that the No campaign sunk literally millions of dollars into that area. And, you know, there's a reason why there's quite a, you know, quite a visible boundary around that lower Yes vote there. And the No campaign not only pumped a lot of money into advertising, they were also willing to, just as Gizelle said, really use quite frightening misinformation. And when someone is frightened, if someone's been told that marriage equality is something to fear or that it's going to attack their way of life or put their children at risk, if someone's afraid, they're less willing to make change. They're more willing to stay quiet. So I look at that No result in Western Sydney and I would be surprised if many of those No voters are actually voting against same-sex marriage or even against LGBTI people, but rather they're voting to just stick with the status quo because they've been told that change is something to fear.
Right, right. How did GetUp and the other... How did you go? I mean, what sort of things we were hearing there from Gizelle about some suggestions, but what was the actual experience in Western Sydney for the Yes campaign?
Ivan? Do we have him on the line? Sally, it's back to you. Let me go fix that.
Sorry.
Oh, no, there he is.
I had you guys on mute. Yeah. Look, I think it's probably best to have Sally talk to the perspective of the Yes campaign because she was right in the middle of it. But what I'd like to do is I actually like to touch back on what your first speaker said and then what also Sally said. Mm-hmm. The first speaker was very, very right in saying that this isn't an issue of new Australians or ethnic divisions on the issue of marriage equality. What we do know is that some of these electorates are some of the most religious electorates in the country. Mm-hmm. For example, Ed Husic's seat at Chifley, that's number five of the most religious electorates, and Jason Clare's is number three, and Chris Bowen's is number one. So 92% of people in that electorate consider themselves religious. And research that we undertook, quite a few years ago, indicated that while the majority of Australians support marriage equality, when you look at the strong opposition of marriage equality, which nationally, so strong opposition is only about 14%, one of the primary motivators of that opposition is faith. And so that was our biggest barrier, I think, to prosecute a campaign to try and encourage people to vote in favour of civil marriage reform.
Yeah.
So I really, really think it's a horrible thing for some pundits and even our Prime Minister to suggest that that it is based on immigration that it is the issue, but it's actually of faith.
Yeah,
That's our biggest challenge. Yeah,
I was going to say earlier this morning, in fact, during an interview with 3AW, the Prime Minister blamed the migrant population and actually singled out Muslim Australians for being behind the No vote. So that obviously is
absolutely ridiculous, right? Like, even if every single Muslim person voted No, which I know for a fact they didn't, there were some incredible Muslim leaders of this campaign and people who've been working as faith leaders in their communities for years on marriage equality and other LGBTI issues. But even if every single Muslim person voted No, that's 2% of the population.
Yeah.
And it's such a ridiculous thing to say when we know that the Anglican Church pumped $1 million of church money into this community. I mean, the head of the No campaign was run by a group calling themselves the Australian Christian Lobby. You know, these were people who were using, biblical quotes and Christian religion and misappropriating that against marriage equality. Yeah. Not a Muslim thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sally, so we heard from our previous caller, and we also heard early today from Fahid Ali, who's the founder of the Muslims for Marriage Equality. He obviously said mm-hmm. that your Turnbull was wrong to blame Muslims, but he's also the story that we've heard a little bit is that the Yes campaign really didn't get into Western Sydney.
Particularly with counteracting, because there was the No campaign put out a lot of information in other languages, and there wasn't, was there an effort on from different parts of the Yes campaign to try and do something similar, or were there issues with just, as Giselle pointed out, ideas just not translating?
No, absolutely. We engaged in those communities. We had a lot of like video content going out with people from calls backgrounds, culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds, mm-hmm. and as I said, faith leaders. We also had lots of resources translated into, you know, a dozen different languages. The reality is, though, the nature of this postal survey, which we didn't want, yeah. we certainly didn't choose, but the nature of this survey meant that to make sure we got enough yes votes back in, the campaign did prioritise areas where it would be easier to secure a vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's not something to... that's not our choice. We wouldn't have chosen to run this campaign like this. But, you know, while we did campaign in those areas, there had to be other priorities as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, the campaign was essentially about getting people out to vote, and we were very, very successful in that.
Really high turnout for a postal
congratulated. Given that, I mean, as Ivan was saying, that... attitudes which are more homophobic or negative towards LGBTI populations are often based upon strong religious beliefs or associated with those. Where do we see, or what are the things that we need to do over time? Because those attitudes don't change very quickly, do they? What do you think we need to do over time to wrap this up, to change those attitudes?
Well, I think there's two things. The first is that quite soon, I think before the end of the year, we're going to start seeing LGBTI weddings and queer people are going to be able to get married.
So the experience will make the difference.
People who had concerns will hopefully see that it doesn't affect religious freedom, it doesn't affect anybody's freedom to worship.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.